and now has got this drive with Peugeot this year.
Thanks, Jeremy. Jeremy Shaw down there in the pit lane with Graham Tyler. Joining me in the studio, and it's been a while since we've done this together. Jim Martin, hello, mate.
It's been a couple of days, hasn't it?
Yeah. I was just looking at some photographs, actually, on the Midweek Motorsport Facebook collective of the very first Patina Mon in 1998. Wow. I look a lot different.
Don't we all? I had considerably more hair, and then yours has done remarkably well over the winter.
I've got more hair now than I've ever had. It's Dario Franchitti, Darren Turner, and myself are trying to bring back long hair. For blokes in a very 1970s type of way.
What a tremendous idea! Perhaps if someone grows an excessive amount, perhaps I could borrow some. That's another story.
Well, we don't want you to have to go through your last ordeal from the last time you had some rapid hair growth. We'll gloss over that. People will know the story. Now, you were here yesterday, and in fact earlier on this week, and you've seen the LMS cars running early on this week. We got down to some very interesting times in qualifying this afternoon. We'll talk about that in a wee while. But the conditions now, very, very different from what we've had for the rest of the week, Jim. And I think most of the teams will take the opportunity with the possibility of some rain on Saturday to get out there and try some damp or wet weather settings.
Oh, it's an absolutely tremendous idea. It's a great opportunity because when it does rain here, it rains a lot. And I've been here in the past. I can remember races in the late 90s where the rain came down like it did this afternoon, but it didn't come down such as this afternoon for 15 minutes at a stretch. It came down for an hour or two or three, and the front straightaway, because it used to be a runway, it's a large flat slab of concrete. There are no drainage holes in it, and I can remember back in the late 90s, so when we did have the tremendous downpour, the front straightaway, because the water has no place to go, ended up being 3 and 4 inches deep. And they parked the cars in long pit lane and said, well, when the rain stops and things drain a little bit, we'll think about restarting the race. And 3 and 4 hours later, we did. But in the meantime, when it rains here, there are pieces of the racetrack where it gets damp and it gets slick in a huge hurry. And we had the vintage cars out this afternoon, just before the supper hour, and the rain did start to come down. And they weren't out for 5 minutes, and there was just a light drizzle. And
then it came down.
Yes, and then it came down. And in the meantime, we had people desperately trying to collect their vintage automobiles before they came in contact with anything solid. There was no misfortune, but on the other hand, the track gets very, very slippery here in a tremendously short period of time.
The voice of Jim Martin, a longtime colleague of ours over here in the United States of America, and I'm pretty certain was the first ever voice on the American Le Mans Series radio network all those years ago. Down in the pit lane, we've got Jeremy Shaw and Graham Tyler, and we'll try and get with not too many TV cameras that we can watch for action around the circuit, and with no store being put on the times tonight other than for us to have a look, and we will keep you in touch with that. But if you've listened to us before on a Thursday evening, you'll know that what we try to do is get through as many of the teams and drivers as we can and have a chat with them all, as we're looking forward to just one session tomorrow before the warm-up and the race on Saturday. Mika Salo is in the pit lane with Jeremy Shaw, and a reasonable qualifying effort from Ricci, but their top car only down in fifth position, and that's not the usual performance from Mika and Dave Sims and the boys.
That's true. Fifth place in GT2 qualifying, Mika Salo. Fourth place, beg your pardon, sorry. Misinformation from Mr. Hindhoff there. Blame him rather than me.
Oh, hang on a second. Sorry, I've got the practice.
But still not what we're used to expect from Ricci Competizione Ferrari.
No, it was difficult. Difficult session, and competition is getting harder also. And Sebring is a funny place that the circuit changes every day. And yesterday our car was really good, and today it wasn't exactly what I wanted. So it was best we could do today, but it's a long race.
It's a weird track, this, isn't it? I mean, it's so susceptible to temperature changes, isn't it? The track surface seems to just alter the balance of the car almost within the hour.
Yeah, you just have to follow the circuit, what it does, and try to make the car work on it. And today, since the morning, it was a bit funny, and I wasn't happy with it, but it's still okay. Car handles well, it's comfortable, but it wasn't fast enough in qualifying, but
as you say, it's a long, long race. Now, Mika Salo, you've got a massive amount of experience, a lot of Formula One experience, and what's your plan for this year? We weren't sure whether we were going to see you back here in the American Le Mans Series. Certainly good to see you. What is your plan for the season?
I don't know yet. It might be a long holiday for me, but this is one race.
Come on. I can't see you not doing any sort of racing.
Of course, you'll find something to do. So that's not a problem. But I just want to keep my things open at the moment and see what happens.
Fair enough. And I know you had a bit of fun recently, didn't you, on a bit of sort of slippery stuff up in northern Sweden, or Finland, probably.
Yeah, Finland. We did Arctic Rally, but that's actually more grip than here,
because
with the spike tires and the ice and. They grip more than an asphalt, so it's good fun.
I know you've done that a bunch of times over the years. Did you do it again with Kimi Raikkonen? Has done it for a year or two. JJ Legend's done it for many, many years. And Mika Hakkinen as well. You were all out there, were you?
Yeah, we were all out there. And JJ is quick with the rally car. Kimi was his on the first rally, and he did good job also. He kept it on the track whole rally, and then he managed to crash the car in the park firmware. So that was a pretty good move from him. My car stopped on the 8th stage for the gearbox problem, and Häkkinen was driving like a grandmother, so it was fun, and it's really, really good adventure for us, and it's something totally different, because rally in Finland is a big thing, and Finnish top drivers, they are unbelievable quick in the rally cars, and even JJ, he finished 7th overall, but he was nearly 7 minutes behind the leaders.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. These guys are just crazy. They just go flat sixth gear everywhere. They just use the snowbanks to slow the car down.
When you hear Mika Salo calling people crazy, you've got to wonder what the heck you're doing. But are you going to do any more of that? I mean, clearly it's a massive amount of fun.
It's fun, yeah. And next winter again. That's just a winter hobby.
Very good. Mika, great to see you, and have a good race this weekend.
Thank you.
And that, dear listener, is the absolute essence of Thursday night here at Sebring. Bit of chat about what's going on the circuit. And a bit of chat about anything else that we can think about. Mika Salo, as ever, good for a quote with Jeremy Shaw down there in the pit lane. Let's run through some times for you with just over 12 minutes gone. Sebastian Bourdais in the number 08 Peugeot. That car has turned to 2 minutes 06879. Now, let's put that in some perspective for you. On the dry track this afternoon, that same car did a 1:45.559. Okay, so that is something in the region of 21 seconds, almost 22 seconds slower around the Sebring track than that car went this afternoon.
22 seconds slower than the car went this afternoon, but it's still 5 seconds faster than either one of the Audi R15s.
Yes,
Sebastian Bourdais, he's going much slower than this afternoon, but he's still amazingly fast considering the conditions, I think. Wow.
Renato Capello Dindo is in second place in the number two Audi, 2:11. Marco Werner, 2:12 in the number one car. And Tom Christensen, it looks like, has just jumped into the number two car.
Marco Werner was listening and decided to change my story.
Now, I think it's drying out there, Graham Tyler, in the pit lane, because we've just seen Marco Werner take 10 seconds off his last lap time. Wow. So it's not raining now, of course. Okay. What's the temperature like down there?
It's very pleasantly mild for an Englishman. It's probably fur coat weather for Floridians, but it's very pleasant for us down here. In spite of Dindo Capello being noted on timing and scoring as being in the car, he is actually standing in the back of the pits, as is Alan McNish, who is, as I speak, getting his balaclava on ready for his session.
So that's been Tom right from the start?
So it's been Tom from the start.
I spotted him just going back out there. I thought they must have done a change.
No, it's been Tom from the start. And
Marco's just jumped into the one car and gone out.
Yeah, yes, and Lucas Lure will be next in rotation for that. There is still this rule in place that each driver must complete 3 nighttime laps. A number of teams have elected to leave it a little while before coming out, partly because they do actually want to run in the dark rather than in the twilight.
Yes.
And also because they believe it will stay dry and therefore the circuit will become more favourable.
People out on sort of inters or
To be
sticks?
Honest, I haven't been able to dip over the wall and have a look yet at anybody coming and
wise
stopping.
Move.
But I will do so when the moment avails itself. In the meantime, to answer a question you posed me at lunchtime, when you were querying what had been leaking on the number one Audi in the morning session, it was diesel. They had a diesel leak. They had a leak from a diesel filter. And it was simple as that. It was just a simple leak. Something hadn't been properly secured. It was tightened and all is well.
Not the first time we've seen that happen, because wasn't it Monza that Rocky's car had a had a problem, and it actually lost its pressure and stopped on the outlap, which caused them all the problems.
It pulled out of the pits and got no further than about 100 yards, didn't it?
Yes. Thank you. The other question that I have for you tonight is, I need to know the cubic capacity of the new Audi V10 engine.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
I will go and find somebody who looks suitably qualified to answer that for you.
We did have
Would Ralph Jutner do for you?
Yes, he would do. I noticed on the Le Mans entry that it was shown as the same cubic capacity as the V12, and I'm not sure that's true.
No, I don't believe it is, but I'm sure Mr. Jutner will tell us when he has a moment from his headset. So I'll ask a question and come back to you when he's free.
Merci beaucoup. Let's quickly look down one or two of the other times. In GT2, Pierre Caffer behind the wheel of the 62 Ferrari, the Ricci car. Now, he's just jumped in and... into that car and gone round in a 220.6, and for the sake of probity, let's do what we did with the G, with the P cars. That car did a 203.8, so time's getting closer to as the number one Audi has just gone round in a 201.2. So it won't be long before we've got a sub 2 minute lap. In the meantime, whilst we wait for that, as promised, we'll try and interview every at least a representative of every one of the teams in the pit lane, and Jeremy Shaw is endeavouring to do just that at his end of the pit lane. And is with whom, Jeremy?
I am with Brian Willman at the Autocon Racing.
Great to have them
Lola
back.
AER and Brian Willman, and the whole cast of characters is here, I tell you. They really are a cast of characters. It's great to see you guys back. Let's start with Brian Willman. Brian, you haven't been out in this car, presumably, since Petit Le Mans, have you?
No, that's not true. We've been out with it several times this week. We haven't been out in the dark with it since Petit Le Mans.
Until this week.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we had a winter test in December, but it was mostly a test of our ability to reach a sunny spot in California by going through snowstorms. And then our attempts to go testing since then were thwarted by a variety of things. We've had a really good week, though. Worked hard, and, we're okay. We're okay.
Good for you. It's great to see this car back again and running well. And Brian... Have you done the lion's share of the drive? But Chris McMurray, you qualified the car, Chris, and pretty respectable time considering. I don't think you've been in the car since Petit.
No, I haven't. We were pretty happy with 51.7. Particularly happy since we really didn't get going until Wednesday. We've got a new wing on the car, and we hadn't run that yet. And for myself, I think I might have done, I'm gonna say 15, maybe 18 laps prior to qualifying. So we're really, really pleased about it, and I think, honestly, if we had a little bit more time, we probably would have gotten down to around 49, which we would have been very excited about, because it really starts to put us in the thick of things. And even at the 51, I think we qualified 7th or something like that, so that's a really good showing for Autocon. It's probably our best qualifying ever, and it'll be fun to, be up there and sort of mix it up.
And how much of it, you're running a smaller rear wing on the car this year, a slightly smaller restrictor, I think, on the engine as well. How has that changed the car, the balance of the car?
Well, to begin with, we were afraid it would change it a lot, so we made the car have very conservative handling, which made it push like a snowplow. We fixed that now, and I don't know that we noticed that much. The thing to remember about these cars is you see the wing, but underneath it there's a diffuser. And the interaction between the wing and the diffuser means a lot. So we're maybe not slowed down very much, not as much as we would expect.
It's good to see the Autocon car. Let's go down further down the pit lane, and Graham Tyler is in the Audi pit.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. And with Dr. Ulrich Beretsky, the man, the genius who makes all the engines for Audi, designs them from a piece of paper. I don't know how he does it, but he does. Dr. Beretsky, you've turned out yet another different engine, but a V10 this time, same capacity as the old V12?
Yes, it's a 5.5-litre as the 12-cylinder has been. The biggest difference is that we cut off two cylinders to make the engine shorter and to save weight.
So the capacity, is that now a longer stroke?
It's all of it, bore and stroke, but I won't go into details now.
Well, I wonder why not.
Yeah, too many French listen to me.
So what is the what's the big advantage then of having a V10 engine over a V12? Just less moving mass?
The biggest advantage is that the engine is shorter. It gives more freedom for the aerodynamics, gives more freedom to the car people. And as I said, it saves weight. And this was a very radical way to save it. But we went for it.
When you had the option to change the engine configuration, did you even consider going down as far as a V8 to make it smaller still?
Depending on the boost and the restrictor size. At the moment, the power requirement is too high to make it with an 8-cylinder. The engine would be too bulky and too heavy.
And does it deliver its power in much the same way as the V12?
That's a question you have to ask our drivers. I guess yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time. Dr. Bretsky's on the move again, so I'll pass back to John and see if we've got any representative times coming in yet.
Still haven't had anybody under the 2 minutes, Graham. Thank you for that. Very illuminating. And as ever, we should thank all of the teams in advance. In the American Le Mans Series, the kind of access that we get to people like Ulrich Beretsky and the rest of the teams up and down the pit lane, but they're clearly stopping short of giving us any sensitive information. But the question was asked, the answer was given, and some background to the answer as well. It is the number two Audi who has the fastest time at the moment, 2 minutes 1.014 seconds from Lucas Lehr in second, 2 minutes 1.296. And Alan McNish about to get into the two car for the first time since I've been here, first time today. In third place and fourth place are the two Peugeots 08 and 07. Frank Montani, as we heard, has jumped into the 08 car. The 07 at the moment on our timing screen shown to be Pedro Lamy, but I haven't seen that car myself to check through. In fifth place, the first of the P2 runners, and the pole sitter from earlier on this afternoon. If you didn't catch our qualifying show in video and in audio, then the highlights will be posted on the video player at RadioLeMond.com and SpeedTV.com for you. Adrian Fernandez, 2:11.2. GT1's come up in sixth and seventh with Johnny O'Connell and Olivier Barreto in the two GM Chevy Corvettes ahead of the what I think is going to be the battle of the year, the GT2 battle. At the moment, it is the two Risi Ferraris that hold sway with Mika Salo's 62 car ahead of its teammate 61 by just about 0.4 of a second, and a second or 0.8 in fact further back, Johnny Copper's time in the 007 V8 Vantage Aston Martin, the first time that car has been here. Remember last year it was the GT3 car, Paul Dreyson just climbing into the Dreyson Motorsport machine. Now Luis Perez Compank with the Munchie sponsorship on the 430. This is the Now, I do have to keep looking at my list every time for the name of this team because I want to call it AF Corsa, but it is AE Engineering PCOM, Advanced Engineering PCOM, it says on my list. We know it better as AF Corsa. That is Luis Compank, and yes, he was a rally driver, still has been. He's just dropped down a position, actually, because Tommy Milner in the number 92 BMW... For those of you who haven't been keeping up to date with sports car racing and LMS in particular, BMW's new M3 GT2 Challenger is here. And my goodness, what a clip it was going out earlier on today. It certainly made a great impression. Rounding off the top six then is the number 40. This is the GT2 Ford GT. David Murray at the wheel.
Nice result today.
Well, best ever qualifying for them, and expecting these marginal conditions back at Detroit. That car went very well, as did the 007 Aston Martin. So expect those cars to see well. And for those people following VC Racing, the number 18 car seen for the first time this week. And it is Stuck Jr., Johannes Stuck, who is in that car at the moment, seventh in category. Jeremy Shaw, down in the pit lane.
I am in the PGG Panels pit with Ian James. And he is the 2004 LMP2 category champion. And you've raced sporadically in the American Le Mans Series since then, but not on a full-time basis. Great to see you back in the series this year, Ian James, with this PGG Panels car.
Yeah, obviously, I've got fond memories here at Sebring, having a couple of class wins in the past, and it's great to be back with PTG and with the panels organization, and looking forward to the race.
And a very competitive teammate, of course, with Dominic Farnbacher, with whom you drove briefly with the Tafel team a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I drove here in 07 with Dominic, and he's a really good guy, quick driver, and the two of us are going to really take this race on.
And I know you're enjoying driving this V8 car again.
Yeah, it's good to have some V8 power again, that's right.
Good for you, James. I know he and Dominic Farnbacher are really very competitive in this Yokohama Tired Panos Esperanti in GT2 this year.
Yeah, they were right up the top of the timing sheets early on in the practice and qualifying, and finished up in qualifying in sixth position, and they were in the top three for quite a while there. The track is about dry now, and it's always that difficulty, isn't it, on a race circuit. Normally you know when to put wet tyres on because the rain's come and you need to put them on and you need to get them on quickly. But judging when to get them off and put slicks on from either inters or wets is the sort of thing that the team chief really dreads, and intermediate conditions is the time when you need the cunning of Garry Kasparov to work through how you are going to get that done. Let's go down to Dyson Racing and to their pretty pair of coupes. Another pair of new cars to that team this year in stunning BP colours, and Graham Tyler is down in the pit lane with them. Graham?
Yeah, we'll have a word with Ben Devlin. I was going to speak to Marino, but he's just been summoned to put his crash helmet on as he's next in the rotation. But Leitzinger taking the car out first. This is the number 20 Dyson car we're talking about. Ben, you've not turned the wheel today.
No, it hasn't. It's nice to see the other guys do a little bit of work. No, no, we haven't today. We've been running to the schedule, really. The plans were for, obviously, Butch and Marino to run this morning and Butch to qualify, so it's my turn tonight.
You've had some laps in the car, presumably. You're getting to grips with it?
Yeah, obviously, I had the advantage last year, obviously, and the year before, running with the Mazda plant. So very, very familiar with that, and obviously the Clawless Coupe we're used to, and a lot of miles over the winter and things like that. So definitely done a few laps in it, yeah.
It's always different when you finally get here and things go for real, though, isn't it?
It is. We sit back at Laguna and think, okay, we've got 300 days, or we've got sort of 100 days to go. There's loads of time, and then we're here, and it's like, oh, hang on a minute. So yeah, it is tight, and but hopefully we'll see how the race goes, and hopefully it will show in the race how well we've prepared.
That little Mazda power unit you've been used to, it pokes out an awful lot, doesn't it?
It's not bad. Yeah, no, we're really pleased with it. With the development we've done on it the last 2 years, it really, really made it a strong little package, and some more improvements over the winter. So we'll see. Hopefully it's good.
And your part in all this is restricted for the moment to the endurance races?
Yeah, it is at the moment. It's been nice to come on board, obviously, with Dyson Racing this year. It's a great step forward for the project, and I'll be here for most of the races and all the races, really, so help out with anything I've learned and stuff like that. Obviously, learning from them guys as well. So, restricted to driving, unfortunately, the longer races, and we'll see how the season goes.
Decision made to come out a little later in this evening's session rather than first thing. Is that because you want to run in true dark, or just because there's no sense in rushing?
It's easy to say that it's going to be dry for the weekend, but you never know, and it seems silly to run in the wet if it's not going to be, and we want to be here and have the best shot for the race, so we've got to see. And I'll go.
Oh, the man's off. There's Butch Leitzinger brings the car in. Marino Franchitti will hop over the wall next, but Ben needs to be in attendance as well. And we have a certain gentleman of German extraction, Austrian extraction indeed, of immense height, who's with Jeremy Shaw, also of immense height.
Yeah, with one of the legends of not only sports car racing, but racing in general, Hans Stuck. Wonderful to see you back here, Hans. You won this race three times, and you're back in behind the wheel of a Porsche for the first time in quite a few years.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, my last Porsche drive was back in 1997 with the factory at Laguna Seca at the World Championship. And I must say now, doing a couple of laps, I missed something, to be honest, because the Porsche is still a great race car to drive. Lots of torque in the engine, you know. It's good to have the engine in the back, you know, very good traction. And even with these different conditions I just had, I really enjoyed it, you know. And of course, what gives me the most pleasure is racing with my son here. We done a couple of races on the BMW before, like in Malaysia and Japan and Nürburgring. And we're looking forward to a good weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's just wonderful to see you back here. And you won this race for the first time in 1975 in a BMW. You won it twice, of course, in 962s, and here you are now in this very impressive GT2 car. I mean, the performance of this car is pretty stout, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, VC Racing has done a good job so far. We are on the Michelin development tires, you know. The beginning was a bit rough. This was my first out on doing this week. But Ronnie Maxa is trying hard. We get it all together. And to be honest, I can't wait to go back in the car. You're really looking forward.
And you're going to do your full stints in the car? Sure. I mean, you've obviously kept yourself fit. You're still keeping yourself very busy as well.
Yeah, sure. I did a couple of races last year. I did Nürburgring 24 Hours, won the class in the Scirocco, doing track racing, raced with Lamborghini, so I'm still fit. And racing is racing. It's in my blood. That's where it is.
Yeah, and it's so much fun racing with your son, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's something really great. I tell you, when we were the first time on the podium together 2 years ago, I'd be very honest, I had some tears in my eyes because I thought about my dad looking at us from Sky. I think he must be very happy with this.
Yeah, it's great. And he's coming along. He's not done an awful lot of racing, but he's obviously got some ability, Hans. It's in the genes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And now we have a third one, little Ferdinand. He's racing the ADAC Formula Masters in Germany. And my last target is to race with my two sons together.
Yeah, well, when's that going to happen?
Maybe next year.
Now, what is the plan for this season, both for yourself and for Johannes?
Yes, I might join the team again at the Petit Le Mans. Other than that, with my new job with the Volkswagen Group, I'm very busy, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, I mean, you're a spokesman now for Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's a bit different, you know. The Volkswagen Group has a lot of different brands like Audi, Seat, Bentley, Bugatti, and I'm coordinating all their motorsports activities. Hell of a job. I'm very pleased to be able to do this. I'm very happy, you know.
Super, it's great to see you back.
What was this?
It's great to see you back.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate being here and welcome all the fans.
Great to hear Hans Stuck back on the radio with Jeremy Shaw. We'll go back down to Graham. I've got some trap speeds here which might be of interest to everybody. Sam Collins of Race Car Engineering has fired them through to us at studio@radiolemon.com. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network presented by Porsche. Graham Tyler in the pit lane. Tyres.
Yeah, I just wandered past the Peugeot pits and saw most of the drivers in sort of American football style huddle with the number 8 car up on its jacks in the pit lane. And the result of the huddle, which is now broken up, is that the car has had its wet tyres, and they were full wets, not inters, swapped for now full slicks. So that decision, at least, has been taken by Peugeot.
Thanks, Graham. Looks like more rain on its way. Just had a look out of the back of the studio. Fiona Miller has just paid us a visit and is striding back towards the pit lane now. She is, as ever, fragrant as ever for those regular listeners. Trap speeds, then, as supplied to us by Race Car Engineering and Sam Collins of that parish. These were taken yesterday afternoon. It'll be interesting to see how these compare to anything that was done today. The fastest of the cars down the back straight here would be, I think, a car perhaps that not many people would have won money on. The Lola BO610 at 181.5 miles an hour. Peugeot, just a couple of tenths of a mile an hour behind. 181.5 for the Lola, 181.3 for the Peugeot. Best of the Audis, 179.3. The P1 Acuras, best speed, 173 miles an hour. The Lola BO540, now that is the Intersport car, which is the XPK Motorsports machine, which has been adapted to LMP1 spec, not as I said earlier on this afternoon, 171.3 miles an hour. The P2 Acura, 163.5. So there's the effect of slowing the P2 cars down. The Lola Coupe, 163.2 miles an hour. Now, the GT cars, no surprise, of course, that the C6R Corvette was quickest at 163.1 miles an hour. But just 5 miles an hour slower, the Dodge Viper, ahead of the GT2 Corvette C6, the Lugiolotti car, by a couple of miles an hour. The best of the other GT cars would be the new BMW E92 M3, 153.2 miles an hour. Porsches, Best of the Porsches, 153 flat. Ferrari, 152.2. Panos, 152.2. The Ford GT, 152.2. And the Aston Martin Vantage, a 150.8. So losing speed in the straights, which means somewhere it's making up speeds in the corners quite considerably, because it was putting in pretty good times this afternoon, and in fact qualified the 007 in ninth position in the GT2 category. So a few interesting stats there from Sam Collins. Thanks to him for that. Studio at RadioLeMans.com. Jimmy Magnuson says, any possibility of investigating why the Intersport car wasn't out in qualifying? Good to have Stuckey back. Sounds like you can't get enough now. We just need to get James Weaver back on the track too. Graham Tyler has the Intersport answer.
They had all sorts of misfire problems earlier on today, which they were trying to track down. Spoke to John Field at the end of the morning session, and they'd had lots of trouble with the engine intermittently cutting out. So that was what they were investigating, and I believe why they missed qualifying.
Thank you, Graham. That's answered very quickly. Asked and answered. Studio at RadioLeMans.com. Gathering dark clouds for us here at Sebring, although drying line, if not a full dry line on the track. It's Jim Martin and John Heindorf in the booth watching this. Very evocative, of course, to look outside now and see the lights beginning to shine through. It is pretty much fully dark now around us. This isn't a studio, actually, because I've just found out our light switch doesn't actually...
it's dark everywhere.
Did I get a flicker of a light switch there? Did we get it? Oh, there we go. And let there be light. Only since Gunnar Jeanette walked in has the light started working. It's that electric personality. We'll have a chat with Gunnar in a moment. Interesting, those trap speed times, Jim. I don't think anybody would have thought that it would have been anything other than a diesel that was quickest in a straight line.
Absolutely. That's the theory. The diesels are supposed to make power. The torque is supposed to get them out of the corners faster. And
just
surprise.
Keep
going. Exactly. And the thing that perhaps wasn't a surprise at the other end of the charts is the GT2 cars were all so close.
Yeah.
Within tenths of a mile an hour of each other.
Whilst we were talking there, Alan McNish, you may have heard us talking about him getting into the number two car for the first time today. And he is the first and as yet the only man in this evening session who is sub 2 minutes. 158.5 has given him about a 3 seconds gap between himself and teammate Lucas Lehr, who is now installed in the number one Audi R15 TDI. Stefan Sarrazin and Christian Klien in the 8 and 7 Peugeot respectively. Why do I want to call them something other than a Peugeot? My apologies. 07 and 08 then, those two cars, fourth and third. David Brabham now in the number nine Patron Highcroft Racing Acura, the P1 car, has only done one lap, and Brabs has already put it in the fifth position. That will only get better. Excellent opportunity for them and the 66 car with Simon Pagenaud in that car. And again, that's the first time he's been in that car today. Remember that team, the XM Radio Deferrin team, didn't join the series until Utah last year, so they haven't been to Sebring. They've got a brand new car. They're working with rear tires on the fronts. So there's a lot to learn there as well.
They've got a whole bunch of new drivers, and it looks as though they're going to start the season with a bang after qualifying.
Yeah, they put the car on pole position, if you weren't with us early on, with Scott Dixon doing 11 laps before he managed to secure the pole position for Saturday's 57th running of the Mobile One Sebring 12 hours. Chris Hall this morning and this afternoon was doing sterling work in the Viper. We were talking about the trap speeds of that car, the fastest of the GT2 cars down the back straight. And Jeremy Shaw, that car has been the subject of continued development. Started life, of course, let's not forget, as not a GT2 car, but a GT3 car, and not the work of a moment to make the transformation into the sort of performance we're seeing here today and this week.
That's exactly right, John. And this Primetime Racing Group has just done a phenomenal job with this car. They've been racing this car now for over a year. They've run at least three different types of tyre on this car. They're now settled on Dunlops, and they've really developed it so well. And Chris, that car was going magnificently this morning.
We struggled early on in the week, but this morning we hit on a great setup, and I did a couple of laps in the car, got out of the car, we were in fourth position, dropped to sixth by the end of the session, but quite frankly, I think I had a shot to get the car on the front row, but...
Unfortunately.
Yes, I think a few people didn't like our speed, and we got slapped with a restrictor on the car, or extra restrictor, so we had to deal with that and change the engine map into to deal with that situation, and we had a bad qualifying.
Yeah, but it's I guess it, yeah, hats off to the team for showing that speed, but I guess you went a bit too fast in this morning.
Yeah, I think so.
You've not got the politics down, Chris Hall, have you?
No, I suppose we should have sandbagged like a lot of other people tend to do. But credit to the team. It was all down to chassis development, not engine development, down to chassis development. So credit to the team. But we're getting there. We're getting there.
I tell you, it's a great attitude down here, John, and everybody here, because you know, these guys, they worked so hard over the winter. They got the car going really, really quickly. And they're not jumping up and down and bitching and moaning about the fact they have been slapped a smaller restrictor on the car, which has taken away, what, 50 horsepower or so?
Hard to say, Jeremy, but at a guess, probably something like that, you know. So we've got like 250 horsepower now.
250 horsepower, yeah. But I mean, yeah, you just got on with the job. You know, you've taken it in your stride, and you can do the best you can. And you had a good car in qualifying. You just didn't get the lap together, you were telling me.
Yeah, power steering broke on my outlap. We had a engine issue, which I think was probably created by the restrictor. Couldn't get the engine over 5,000 RPM. A few other problems. It was just a bad qualifying session, but we still qualified eighth despite those problems. And yeah, we're a team that just keep digging, and we don't get upset by too much, and you know, we'll be there.
This is the sort of track that is going to suit the Viper. You've got some fairly long straights here. You can really use the torque and the horsepower of this engine to catapult you along to these straightaways.
And that's so correct. When we get to St. Pete, of course, it's going to be a struggle again. But as I say, we've improved the chassis, so hopefully we'll be better at St. Pete than we were last year.
Super job. Well done.
Thank you.
Great stuff down there in the pit lane with Jeremy Shaw. It's the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, powered by Porsche. We mentioned that we had a visitation and a bit of a presence in the studio. We have been flicking the light switch in here since the start of the session, 41 and a half minutes ago, and got nothing. Gunnar Jeanette walks in, and suddenly, all of a sudden, the lights work as we have another car down below 2 minutes. It's Stefan Sarrazin, the 08 Peugeot that goes to the top of the times. Alan McNish now in second position in the Audi R15. And Gunnar Jeanette just popped into the studio just to say hello, really, but we've started talking oddly about cars.
Imagine that.
Now, you were driving an Audi recently, and when you said you were driving an R8, I wondered if you meant a road car, but you didn't mean a road car at all.
No, I definitely didn't mean a road car. I got the pleasure of driving one of, I think, the best race car that I've ever driven, which is an Audi R8.
Now that's something coming from you, because just remind everybody what your first race car was.
The first race car I ever drove was a Porsche 935. But driving such things as 917s, I mean, every car is special in its own way.
Correct.
But you know, absolutely, without a doubt, the R8 was the, can honestly say, the best race car that I've ever driven.
And that was here?
Yep, that was here 2 weeks ago in a historic event. It's hard to believe that car is historic.
Qualifies,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, definitely, I wasn't going to turn down the opportunity to drive it.
And user-friendly, able to get into it. And I mean, clearly, it's, you know, it's not right up to date technology, but still clearly an awesome piece of kit.
Yeah, very awesome. And, you know, in comparison with the Zytec that I drove at the end of last year, I mean, not as much downforce and overall a little bit slower, but it's a flat bottom car. It doesn't have tunnels. But it's just the most user-friendly and you know, just absolutely lovely car to drive.
Tell me what times you were doing around here.
I got into a high 51, I believe, with customer tires and a customer map.
Okay, that would have put you in the top 10 in qualifying.
Yeah, yeah.
In a car that essentially is 9 years old this year.
Yep. It would have been nice to have
turned it up a bit.
Turned some knobs and, made it go a little bit quicker also.
What are you doing for the rest of this year? We were talking about you doing some pretty extreme sports at the moment. Not that motor racing isn't an extreme sport, but you're not driving with us at the moment. So what are you, how have you been filling your time?
Well, filling my time doing a lot of coaching and historic racing, that sort of thing. I've been working with Kinetic Motorsports on their BMW M3 in the Coney series, mm-hmm. Doing some development work for those guys. As we were talking about earlier, also a little bit of skydiving and base jumping. Got to keep the reflexes sharp.
My toes have just curled up as you were talking about it.
All in good fun.
You've been doing quite a bit of work over the last few years with the GT3 program with the Mustang, mm-hmm. and you've been across to Europe and raced the car there. All of a sudden, it seems as though GT3 is really taking off.
Yeah, it definitely has. You know, seeing it and Audi getting involved with the new R8, the street R8, is definitely a good sign for the series. And also, the regulations changes that are kind of coming up in the next year, you know, it's still kind of a, I wouldn't say gray area, but, you know, seeing how those cars are going to kind of transform into the GT2 and GT1 and all that thing, which is still kind of a little bit, honestly, convoluted to me of how that all is going to happen.
Well, these are proper race cars. I mean, we talk about them as if there's some kind of poor relation of a GT2 and the really nothing much more than a street car with a cage in, and that is absolutely far from the truth.
Yeah, that's very, very far from the truth. Over in the FIA series over there, I think on average the top GT3 car was less than 2 seconds off of the top GT2 time. So they are very, very quick cars, and the series is very unique in the way that they equalize them, not just on a weight and restriction, but they actually have one or two drivers that goes out and drives every single car, and or at least one from each make, and they set a baseline time, and then they figure out how to equalize them all. So competition-wise, it's absolutely fantastic.
As a driver, I mean, you're a professional driver, it's aimed possibly slightly more at the gentleman driver or the national category of driver, but is that at least the future of national class GT racing, do you think?
I don't know. I'd like to say it is. I think that the way that they have the whole driver rating thing over there and who can drive with whoever else, for instance, they looked at kind of what I had done and they said, okay, well, you're only allowed to race in the Mustang. Kind of a handicap, which...
You're too good. We're not going to let you play.
It doesn't say much about the Mustang, unfortunately.
I saw you race it at Silverstone in the first GT3 race a couple of years ago, and I had a ball watching that race.
Yeah, it's very good racing. I actually did the first GT4 race over there as well, which was in basically the Coney Challenge car, but with slicks on it, and they had standing starts. It was only the second ever standing start I had done, and it was absolutely fantastic. I had a ball.
It's unusual. It normally goes the other way. Gunnar, thanks for being with us. Good luck with everything that you're doing this year, and hopefully we'll see you back in the series soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure to have Gunnar Jeanette in the studio with us. We'll be back down in the pit lane in just a moment's time.
Live from trackside, this is the American Le Mans Series on RadioLeMans.com.
I had a ball watching. Let's go down to Jeremy Shaw, who is with a real legend of American sports car racing and no stranger to this track either, Jeremy, at Sebring.
Indeed, I'm with Bobby Rahal here, who's had success in every form of motorsports, Bobby, and great to see you with these two fabulous-looking new BMW M3s.
Well, thank you. You know, they've run very well all week, and had a little disappointment in qualifying with the 92 car. We had a mechanical problem, but... you know, we're not the fastest car out there, but I think they're better race cars than their qualifying cars right now. So we've got a very good driver lineup. So we'll just have to hope everything hangs together, and who knows?
I mean, these cars don't have an awful lot of development on them, and certainly, so far as your team is concerned, it's done more miles in Europe than it has, I think, in North America. All things considered, you've got to be delighted with the pace you've shown right away.
Well, the cars have, I mean, they've got some time, but not like Porsche's got. I mean, basically, that's the same car with minor tweaks over the last 5-6 years. So, yeah, we're definitely in a catch-up game here, to be sure. But nevertheless, I have a lot of confidence in BMW and in our team, and I think we just hope for a good, safe, consistent race. And if we're still running at the end without any problems, I think we'll be right there.
Now, there was a problem, as you said, with the number 92 car in qualifying. What exactly turned out to be the problem?
It's a bearing housing that controls the drive shaft in the back of the car, and if it gets too hot back there, the rubber gives up. That piece was really, really quite old, so it was about ready to be changed anyway. It just decided to do it on its own.
In qualifying, that's a bit disappointing, but still, it's the race that counts. And Bobby, great to see you back in the American Le Mans Series.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Jeremy Shaw down there in the pit lane with Bobby Rahal, who has made that transition from driver to team owner very successfully indeed. You're listening to the American Le Mans Series Radio Network on RadioLeMans.com, presented by Porsche. And here is another email coming in. One or two people asking about Jamie Mello. We spoke about it briefly this afternoon. Jamie should have been here earlier this week, but hadn't got all his paperwork in order. I am told that he is either en route or may, in fact, have even landed at New York at the moment, is hopefully on a shuttle flight down here. He was leaving the team with a question about whether they could put their spare driver in the car. IMSA told him if they did, he would then have to race, and there'd be no place for Jamie. And here's another question as well. Should try and get the R8 to a race this year, says one of our correspondents about Gunnar. It would be great to see that car, but of course it's from somewhat of a different era now. Here's Christopher Jones on studio at RadioLeMans.com. I left my computer desk to watch the LMS preview on Speed, and I've heard the explanation for the Intersport absence. The question is, what is the situation with VC? Oh, well, we did that for you, Chris, just as when you sent us in before. We have got the 18 car running around this evening. Certainly, Johannes Stuck was out earlier on. Nicky Pastorelli in the car at the moment. And the 5 car has not yet been out, Graham Tyler. What's the situation
still,
there?
Still no sign of that. I haven't been down that
end. Can I be cheeky and suggest, have they not just put different numbers on the car that was the 5 earlier on today, so that the 5 and the 18 have been out, but they're not the same car?
No, I don't think the 5's been out at all, has
but
it? I think it was
something like that
18.
Could never happen.
No, the 5 was out, was the car, the VC car that was out earlier on, not the 18.
Right.
It was the... Ah, no, you're right, it was the 18. My apologies.
Far better from me to argue with you, Master.
No, yes. Ooh. If you had a forelock, you could took it at this point. Westbrook, Mark Pesseng, and Lance David Arnold, not yet seen
sort of
it yet.
Mentally going through
the drivers.
Going through some of the people who haven't been out the
And
seat
that's what
been.
I've done as well, yes.
We're still missing the 44 Lizard. We were missing the 16 Dyson, but I think I've just seen that exiting pit lane.
Hasn't
and
done a lap
hovering,
yet.
Hovering at my shoulder is an earlier visitor to your realm, which is Fiona, who I think is going to update me on the Jamie Mello situation.
I am indeed. Jamie's just called. He's cleared through New York, so yes, he's on his way now to Florida, and we'll look forward to seeing him here tomorrow morning.
And for those who didn't hear the very gentle dulcet tones, who may not have gathered... Jamie Mello has made it through immigration, which is actually no mean feat on its own. sorry, locals, but it's...
Sad but true.
It is sad but true. It's not the easiest country to come and visit sometimes.
Travel through Chicago, mate. Never a problem.
However, Jamie is now safely en route to Orlando, and we are going to, I'm sure, get him inveigled into the car tomorrow morning.
Fantastic.
He's
just let his...
The request to John is that he enunciates very carefully between Greece.
Ah, yes, Risi.
There we go, Risi and VC.
Risi and Vici.
Veni, Vidi, Risi.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Thank you, Graham. Graham down there in the pit lane with Jeremy Shaw. Myself, John Hindorf, in the booth with a fantastic guest appearance from Jim Martin alongside me, who... was here right at the very beginning of the American Le Mans Series.
Back in the old days. Actually, the downside of Jamie Mello coming bright and early tomorrow morning is that the car will start at the back of the field because he won't have done night practice.
That's unless they get a dispensation, of course.
Yes, that's true. There is that possibility.
Three cars are now under 2 minutes in the Prototype 1 battle at the head of the field because Alan McNish and Sebastian Bourdais have been joined by Paul Sutter, Scott Dixon. What a lap that was this afternoon. And interestingly, almost mirroring his qualifying performance this afternoon when he turned in a remarkable time of 145.2 for 126.5 miles an hour. That came on lap 11. His best lap tonight has come on lap 9 of 10. And he then went into the pit lane and has been for a little while now. Scott Dixon at 157.027. So it is a Peugeot, Acura, Audi, Peugeot, Acura in the top six. And the next quickest car, they're all P1s, by the way. The next quickest car is Gianmaria Bruni in the number 95, which is the AE Pecom Racing Team. This is the car that he shares with Matthias Russo and Luis Compang, the rally driver. He's ahead of Mika Salo in another Ferrari and Mark Lieb in the Flying Lizard Porsche, which means that Adrian Fernandez, who was right up the top of the timing screens earlier on, has dropped down to 10th position. Let's pick up a couple of interviews in the pit lane, and both of these gentlemen have been waiting for a little while. Let's go back to Graeme Tyler first and then head down to Jeremy Shaw. Graeme.
Yeah, thanks, John. Got Marcel Fessler with me. Marcel, the new recruit to Corvette Racing in the American Le Mans Series, certainly, but of course, vastly experienced racing Corvettes over in Europe, Marcel.
Yeah, last year I was driving in the FIA GT with Corvette, and it was an absolute nice experience I have. And now for drive for the factory Corvette is unbelievable. It's a big honor for me to be in this factory team, and I enjoy it very much.
And for yourself this year, you've got other racing planned? Because I know you're going to Le Mans, but other than that?
Rather than that, in Europe, I will drive in Le Mans Series with a P1 car in Europe, with a Lola car. And then I do some open GTs with a GT2 car. So I have quite a few races in front of me.
Quite a mixed program. Thanks, Marcel. That's Marcel Fessler out of the number four, the black Corvette. And we'll pass down the pit lane to the other end and Jeremy Shaw.
Yes, I'm with Gilles de Ferran, the very proud owner of the pole-winning XM Radio Panasonic de Ferran Motorsports Acura ARX02A. And Gilles, fantastic job today.
I tell you, we're so proud. I mean, there's been many nights, many long nights, I should say, to get up to this point. I mean, everybody in the Acura Motorsports program has been working super hard, really, since the middle of last year. The car hit the track in late November, and it's been an unbelievable team effort from everyone involved. And, you know, this is a great reward for all those long nights and early mornings that we had to get through together to go to this point. So I'm very proud, but you know, the congratulations should be not only for the guys in our team, but for everyone involved in the Acura Motorsports program.
Yeah, quite remarkable. It was a magnificent effort by Scott Dixon, wasn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, Scott got it all out of the car when it mattered. You know, we've been tuning the car for the conditions, and we put a lot of new tires in the morning, so the balance was just right when it mattered, and he did an unbelievable job in the car.
Fantastic job, Jill. You've just done your regulation three laps tonight. Happy you're now going to get the car ready. There's a lot of work to be done overnight, though, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, we're very happy with the balance of the car. I mean, we run before in this condition, so we know what the balance is like, and we're very pleased. So we did the regulation three laps and don't not risk anything. Put it away. Prepare the car nicely for the 12 hours. You know, there's a long road ahead of us.
Well done, John.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenal effort by Gilles and the rest of the team, and he gives real hope to all of us who are over 40, which is good enough straight away. Let's go through some of the questions coming in on studio@radiolemon.com. Paul says, will the Intersport car be out tonight. Graham Tyler was watching Intersport earlier on. Graham, any sign of the 37 car this
soir? Not so far this evening, no. I haven't been back into the paddock to investigate why they're not out, but they're not at the moment, no, sorry.
Just on the BC Racing question, the Porsche team, would they be allowed to put their other three drivers in the 18 car and cycle them through, Graham, or is that not an option to them?
That's a very fair question. That's a Dick Martin one, isn't it?
Fine.
I might see if I can stumble across Dick Martin from IMSA and ask that question. I suspect the answer is no.
No, I tend to think if that car doesn't come out, well, it's going to have to start from the back of the grid anyway. So, well, they're just losing track time and setup time, really, aren't they? That's the problem with that particular car. Now, I've had another question about Eric van der Poel, Patrick Six, one of our most fervent listeners from Belgium, has asked if we could possibly find out how Eric van der Poel's week has gone so far. So we'll endeavour to do that. The cat with the hat, as it were, Mr. Tyler.
Well, the man with the hat, yes. Yes, Eric van der Poel. I have seen him here, but not had a chance to interview him on mic yet. We'll put that right if he's in the pit lane this evening. Super. You asked a question about, in my other ear, and I think not on broadcast, about whether Audi and Peugeot are using the same fuel here.
Yeah, that came from Mike Johnson. Is Audi running biodiesel and the Peugeot running regular diesel?
No, the answer is that in ALMS there is only one diesel fuel available, and they are using the same one.
And okay.
So say Dr. Ulrich.
Yeah, which is the Shell blend, isn't it?
That's
the diesel fuel. Okay, thank you very much indeed. And this is a great one. Does it mean anything when someone plans his night around your broadcast? I hope not. You just need to get out more. Thanks for listening, but really.
I was here anyway.
check your pockets. You might need your change to buy a life.
No, he says, I'm looking forward to this racing year. I don't have a name on this, sadly. Great medium, a great show. Looking forward to this racing year. It's going to be another great season, I think. Do you know what? I have to say that I'm not going to disagree with that. As Peugeot go 1 and 2, Nicolas Manassian 153.8. Sebastian Bourdais, by the way, ripped off an unbelievable time of 149.0 whilst we were talking to Graham earlier on. Manassian's done a 53.9, but you know that is 4 seconds, nearly 5 seconds slower. 49 flat, they were 53.9, and then everybody else is 57. Scott Dixon is 57 in the Acura. Alan McNish 58. Those are the only four cars that are under 2 minutes. In GT1, we have got the Corvettes out now, and Johnny O'Connell is the best of those in sixth position. In GT2, Gianmaria Brini in the AE Engineering, or the Advanced Engineering Paycom Racing Team, Ferrari, the 95 car. This is the red, white, and black car with the Munchies sponsorship. Munchies is an ice cream, by the way, before anybody asks.
149 flat, that's a braver lap.
Well,
the car will probably stick, but if you make the slightest mistake, you're
offline.
In the damp and away
you go. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And that's got to be on slick tyres, I would think there. So that is doubly confirmed in my left ear by Graham. Doubly brave. Let's have a word with Graham to answer the Intersport question. Graham. Oh, Graham must be finding out what's going on down there. Let me continue to run down the time. Gianmaria Brini then in eighth position. Leads GT2. Mark Lieb is behind him for the Lizards, the 45 car that is. And Mika Salo in the 62 Risi Ferrari. So what I'm going to have to say is VC Porsche and Risi Ferrari as Johnny Cocker jumps up to a 209.8 and fourth position in the 007 Aston Martin. Now,
well
again,
done.
Said this early on, the 40, the Ford GT, Andrea Robertson at the wheel at the moment, and the 007 were real stars in the intermediate drying conditions that we had in the early practice at Detroit last season. And quite a lot of that surface is concrete as well, similar to here at Sebring. So Johnny Cocker continues the improvement for that car after a fraught first season, a development season done at the track, effectively, for that Aston Martin V8 Vantage. And the Dreyson team have done a cracking job, led to believe that they'll leave that car here for the American Series races, American Le Mans Series races they're doing. They're racing another car of same size, shape and colour in the Le Mans Series. And at Le Mans, they have got their entry for Le Mans, so congratulations to Paul Drissen and the rest of the team. Did enough to catch the eye of the selection committee at Le Mans. In the meantime, there was a small matter of Paul having to persuade the FIA to allow drivers with vision in only one eye to be assessed on their talent and ability rather than having a blanket ban. And he managed to get it done. Not very many people changed the FIA's mind.
the number could be measured with a piece of one hand. But it's an interesting story. The Aston Martin and the Ford GT, similar kinds of development last year, similar kinds of results this year. Things have they've been building race cars at racetracks all last year. They came here this year, and things look to be coming together. It's really great to see.
There was a great throughout last season, and I noticed it particularly at Utah. We were doing a pit stop competition in the pit lane at Utah, and it happened that the Primetime Viper, the Robertson Racing Ford GT, and the Aston Martin, the Drayson Aston Martin, were all in adjacent pits. So they set up an impromptu pit stop competition.
Why not?
The competition between those three cars, which have been, as you say, developing through last season, was quite remarkable. And they clearly have an eye on each other there, knowing, understanding that perhaps they're not going to be ultimately at the very sharp end of the field, but finding someone to race against. Although with now third place for Johnny Cocker, as he goes down to a 207.6, he's only got the Lizards Porsche and the AEP Racing Team Ferrari between himself and the top of the charts. And although he's got a few seconds to find, that is quite a remarkable run thus far by the Aston Martin on Michelin this year, remember. And Clint Field has turned... Oh, now, has Clint Field actually turned a lap in the 37 car, Graham Tyler?
Yes, he has. And I was hoping to have a word with John Field, but he sprinted across to the pit wall on the far side of the pit lane. So no explanations as to why they're so late on parade this evening, other than we knew they were chasing this misfire earlier. We're finally going to see the number 44 Flying Lizard coming out as well. So that'll fill another gap. In fact, that will give us 27 out of 28, which just leaves the errant VC Racing number 5. A number of cars have, from the far end of pit lane, where Jeremy Shaw was operating earlier, a number of teams have already packed up for the evening down there. So my guess is we're not going to see that 5 car, and we do need to investigate that one.
Still being put together pretty much this afternoon, Graham, wasn't
it? Yeah. One of those questions that I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to answer this evening is how is Eric van der Poel's week going, because they're not in evidence anymore next to Risi. Their green-shirted folk have all disappeared.
Ah, okay, Graham, thank you very much indeed. Let's have a quick look at the times to see what's going on. No, still only the top four below 2 minutes. Johnny O'Connell, though, has got down to a 2:01.7. We're going to have a GT1 car, I think, below 2 minutes as the track dries in just a few moments' time. One of the success stories of the 10th anniversary season of the American Le Mans Series, other than the series itself, because of all the fantastic racing that we had, was undoubtedly Patrón Highcroft Racing, who set themselves some very high targets and pretty much achieved everything they set, including winning races outright. Took the championship battle down to the last couple of races against the might of Penske Porsche. They've set themselves an even greater task through the close season with a brand new car, venturing into P1 for the first time and putting themselves up against the likes of Peugeot and Audi this weekend. Jeremy Shaw is with team principal and the driving force behind Patrón Highcroft Racing, and that would be Duncan Dayton.
That would indeed be Duncan Dayton. And Duncan, this Acura has been, let's say, a little bit difficult to develop over the winter time, but it's all come well today for Acura. Maybe not quite so much for your team, but I know you're thrilled with all the work that's been put in and the progress that has been made.
Oh yeah, absolutely a fantastic day for the whole Acura program. I think hats off to Dixie for driving the wheels off the thing. The whole group between HPD, Wirth Research, DeFerrin Motorsports, and Highcroft Motorsports have been working on this program now for about 200 days, so a lot has been done in a very short period of time, and to achieve a pole position in the first outing for the car is just fantastic. I know all the Wirth boys are ecstatic, the HPD boys are ecstatic, and it's a real shot in the arm. We didn't frankly think we had a chance of pole But to be first and sixth, even though we didn't have as good a run as we hoped to have for the Patron Aycroft car, we're really thrilled. I think it bodes really well for the program and for the series and for competition in general.
Yeah, I mean, there's two separate teams running these new P1 Acuras, but you really do work pretty closely together. And I know you take a lot of pride, as you were just saying, in what the other team has managed to do.
Oh, absolutely. The information sharing between the two teams is complete. So they had some bits on our car, and we had some bits on their car. And without having a two-car team running in conjunction, it really is essential for us to work together because there's so much data that we need to acquire. Clearly, the Peugeot and Audi teams have been working on these cars for a long time, but this is our first foray into P1. I'm sorry. So we really have to share the information to try to move the program along.
You're done for the evening. You've been through your program now and get the car. You're back to base.
Yeah, we've got a motor change tonight, so we're gonna get the car back to the tent early so the guys can kind of get on that and get it done before too late in the evening and get some rest and then go at it again tomorrow.
Good program though this evening.
I'm sorry?
Good. The car ran well this evening?
Yeah, perfectly. We're just cruising around. It's wet, so we don't think we're going to learn anything. And like I said, trying to keep the mileage down on some of the components and get the guys a little bit of an early night.
Very good. That's Duncan Dayton in the Patron Highcroft Racing pit here home for the evening.
Mr. Jeremy, just wonder how much wet running they might have done in their development program. There was a suggestion there might be a bit of dampness at the weekend, although every weather forecast that I am seeing now is toning that down a little bit. Jeremy?
Yeah, Duncan, the question is how much wet weather running have you done with this car?
Well, when we were here 3 weeks ago for the 12-hour simulation race that we ran, it was conditions very much like this, big downpour, a lot of standing water on the track. We actually had a red flag condition for about an hour of the 12-hour sim. And so we're really quite confident in the ability of the car to run very quickly in the wet. The downforce that the car generates is astronomical, so that's good in the wet weather situation. So we're actually kind of hoping it might pour a little bit.
Yuck.
Good man.
He's hoping for rain. I'm not.
Good man. No, it can rain as much as we like. You know, we don't mind when it rains.
Quick to add there, John, he's not driving the car, Duncan, that new time.
Indeed not. And he doesn't have to stand out in the wet like you would have to either. Yes, thanks, Jeremy. Jeremy Shaw on the American Le Mans Series Radio Network, presented by Porsche. Jim Martin and John Hindhoff in the booth. And Graham Tyler is our second pair of eyes, ears and feet in the pit lane. And we have completed just over an hour and 11 minutes with around about half an hour then to go this evening. Just after 8:30 local time. We'll remind you that if you're in North America at the moment and you have access to ESPN, the Audi movie Truth in 24 is on TV tomorrow night on Friday evening. If you haven't yet seen it, and I guess that few of you will, it is worth looking at. It's a collaboration between Audi Sport North America, a production company called Intersport, nothing to do with the team, and the very well-known documentary makers NFL Films. It was shot around the Le Mans 24 hours last year and is the story of how the Audi team went to race there. And we've shown it to a couple of people who are not interested in motor racing who enjoyed it just as much as those of us who are. So I would urge you to keep your eyes open on your local schedules tomorrow night. I do believe that it is mid-evening tomorrow night on ESPN, so do keep your eyes open for that. And for those people who keep asking us on the Midweek Motorsport Listeners Collective on Facebook when there might be a DVD out of that, I've had some better news on that today, and I'm going to try and follow that up. Not going to be for a little while, possibly not until after Le Mans this year before that comes out, but I'll follow that up and try and get some more news for you. But perhaps a little more chance of you getting a copy of that than we originally thought.
Well, that's good to hear because, actually, I was thinking of starting my list for Santa Claus, and perhaps that could be at the top of the list this year.
Have a word with me before you leave tonight, Mr. Martin. Uh-huh. It's the American Le Mans Series Radio Network presented by Porsche, live from Sebring. Let's go back down into the pit lane. Nick Manassian is there with Graham Tyler.
Yeah, we wanted to just wandering down the pit lane, came across Nick looking at the times and very pleased with the fact that there are two Peugeots still up at the head of the timesheets.
Yeah, he's not really a case of being fast right now. He's really tricky, actually. I mean, when I look at Stefan's lap time, he must be pretty dry to do this kind of lap. But the principle is to put your eyes into the track, see a little bit your feel in the night. Let's check the light are right at the right place, you know. Don't need to do any changes and just get a feel more than anything, you know, because it's been raining a lot and it's dry quickly, but I'm sure if you touch a curb or something like that, you could quickly lose the car and it would not be really nice if that happened, you know.
We've seen that happen here before in the evening session where it's rained and suddenly somebody's in the wall and there's a lot of chassis damage. You really don't need that. You've had a lot of work already on the cars this week.
Yeah, we've had one little crash, which cost us a session. We had a problem in our car, in the number 7 car. I wouldn't go deep into anything. It's just something a bit unfortunate, you know. The crew has been fantastic. They've been working night and days, really hard. So thanks to them. And the principle right now is to be at the start of the race. We've had plenty of running. Each other, you know. Christian is his first time here and he's done lots of running since Saturday. Pedro has got lots of experience, he's very quick all the time, you know. I know the place as well, so the principle now is to find the best balance in the car in each session and with different tires, with everything, you know, and to be at the start of the race, which is the place to be, you know.
Talking about getting the balance in the car, you've had to start that from scratch again because of huge regulation changes over the winter have stripped a lot of the downforce off the cars.
They did take some downforce off. He hasn't damaged the car that much, apart from it's just lower grip, lower downforce, more sliding around with the car. It's just a case of balancing the front to catch the rear. And after we got less power as well with the car, so we got a car a bit more difficult to drive, but it's the same for everybody. I mean, the power is just Audi and us. We've been restricted by this, but the aerodynamic is the same for everybody, so we've got some very clever people out there, you know, in the team who just know how to balance aerodynamic in the car. So we've been testing a lot, and it's looking good.
And new tyre regulations as well, so that's all changed.
Not here, but that's a funny regulation, you know. It's going to take a long time to do the pit stop. So I think the team as well, the experience is just growing into the Peugeot Sport team. We're just growing into every kind of experience in pit stop, in strategy and all this. So in pit stop, I think we'll be much stronger than we were last year. And in strategy as well. So even if it's changed, I think you cannot take away the experience you've gained. So I think he's looking good for that as well.
One of the big changes that happens here at Sebring is the temperature between midday and the evening session where we are now. How does that affect how the car behaves and how you drive it?
It's just often in endurance is a case of finding the best compromise setup-wise to have a car who works really well in different weather type or the different temperature. Right now here is not very much a big, it's not a big difference here. It's just because it's so warm. It's just you quickly into a good pace. The only difference is we haven't got tire warmers, so the first couple of laps you do. It's a bit tricky. You got to take care because you can lose the car very quickly. Other than that, you know, in the night when you've got your eyes nicely into it, and you got a good rhythm, is actually quicker because it's a bit fresh. The engine breathes quicker. It seems to have more grip. So it's always a good feeling. I love driving in the dark. It's a beautiful feeling. You only get that in American Le Mans Series or Le Mans, and it's just brilliant.
Now, Peugeot are clearly very keen to do well at Le Mans this year, and they brought two cars here for an extended test, which I believe will carry on after the race. On the Monday, you're going to stay for a couple more days and do more testing. After that, what's the rest of the program for Peugeot between now and Le Mans?
Testing and more testing and more testing, because it's the only way to make the car bulletproof. Le Mans is becoming harder and harder. He's a 24 hour sprint. Like he's probably going to be here. Like every endurance race now is an endurance sprint, you know. So you got to be quick and you got to be reliable. And so now the big test is race-wise. We got the Spa 1,000 kilometers, which is a good preparation for the three drivers. Free car will be there as well. After we've got lots of testing, so we go in different places in Europe where we can get the sun. Definitely not in England.
Thanks for that.
as possible as we can be, you know. And as well, the testing we do after the race here is always great because the rubber has been there from the race. So more rubber, more grip, more stress into the mechanical of the car. So it's just even more stress into the car, more data to know what's going on, you know. And like now as well, when it rains like this, the track changes very quickly. You lose the grip, so you got to put more rubber on the track, and so the setup changes a lot, and you can get quickly lost if you just do a bit of everything, you know. So yeah, it's a big testing schedule, and Le Mans is a massive priority, so it's a big push for that.
Last question. We've seen some of these teams do, some of the senior teams in endurance racing do very, very extended tests, up to 36 hours in some cases. Is that the sort of thing that you envisage for Peugeot?
We do 24-hour tests. You know, we do sometimes more, sometimes less. It just depends on the program, you know. We just like try to push the car to its limit and see what's going on. You know what, I couldn't tell you if we've done 36 hours or anything like that. We do 24-hour tests just to see, you know, if we last the distance and along the way what's going on to rectify it. But, yeah, we do test quite a bit.
Thanks, Nick. Plenty of time there with Nick Manassian. Lovely to get hold of one of the Peugeot drivers for quite so long. In the meantime, I think Jeremy Shaw has something for us down at the other end.
Yeah, I'm down in the Dyson Racing pit with Andy Lally, who's just hopped out of the number 16 car. 16 car? 20 car.
Lola.
Huh?
16 Lola.
Yeah, 16 car. And you're smiling from ear to ear, Andy.
It's a lot of fun out there. You know, it's a little bit crazy right now with the puddles and the dampness and the darkness, but... Our Hella lights are lighting this place up pretty well, and this BP Mazda Lola is going real fast, and it's a blast out here. It's an honor to be a part of this Dyson Racing Group here with these guys again for the third year, and it's fun. It's a blast. I just can't wait for Saturday to roll around. I want to get this thing started.
Yeah, because generally Guy Smith and Chris Dyson do the race on their own here, and you've driven the other car for the last couple of years, but I know you're delighted to be driving with Guy and with Chris.
Absolutely. They're both great friends, and they helped me out a lot when I first came on board here with little tips and stuff. And again, you know, it's an honor. The history of the 16 car and Dyson Racing and the fact that we were able to finish second overall here last year, it's great to come back with these guys and see what we have, maybe get one step further up the podium this year.
Yeah, that'll be kind of cool. Good job, Andy Lally. And I've, also here down in this pit is John Dooner, who's a motorsports manager for Mazda Speed. And John, I mean, you've put so much into this sport, Mazda, over the last couple of years. You've got this complete driver development program, and this, of course, is the pinnacle of the Mazda ladder.
You're exactly right, Jeremy. Obviously, the weekend here features a lot of Mazda series, from Skip Barber to Star Mazda to Atlantic, our World Challenge teams here, but this is the tip of the pyramid. Jim Jordan, myself, Dean Case, and Robert Davis will be here tomorrow. We're really proud of this, and obviously an association with Dyson takes it to another level. Certainly Chris and Guy and Andy and Marino and Butch and Ben are going to do a great job for us. We've got a lot of guests from BP and Castrol here, so we feel like this place owes Mazda a little bit. We got the chance of a 13th class win here, and that's what we're going to try to get done on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be a great race. I mean, there's only three cars in P2, unfortunately, but two of them are Mazda Lolas, and the very strong Lowe's Fernandez Racing Acura as well. It's going to be a real dogfight this season, isn't it?
It is. Every point counts. So we know that we're going to do everything we can to make sure we hit the maximum amount of points at each race. And it's kind of funny at the moment with two cars here and four cars in the European Series. I think Unless somebody proves me wrong, I think Mazda has more prototypes running worldwide than any other manufacturer. So we're excited about that, and we're going to give it a go on Saturday.
Yeah, this four-cylinder, two-liter turbocharged engine, it's in conjunction with the AER Technologies in England, and this program has come a long way, hasn't it?
It is. AER, Mike Lancaster, Andrew Saunders, and the team have done a great job. And this motor means a lot to Mazda. You know, 90% of our product on the street, the Mazda 3, the Mazda 6, the CX-7, they all have this family of engines. So this really means a lot to us, and the program has come a long, long way, and the Lola Coupe is fantastic. So, I just pray that we got all the right pieces together, and Saturday gives us a little racing luck.
It is a great looking motor car, this. But you know, it's a big part of, well, all manufacturers, you know, they're in the racing to improve the breed, and very much so with Mazda. A lot of developments from this car go into street cars ultimately.
It is a major part of what we do. In fact, product development is really where this idea of motorsports is housed at Mazda. We're able to take some things from this program and apply them to the next generation of engine, perhaps alternative fuels. And then, you know, as low as the grassroots level, the MX-5 Cup or whatever it is, we've learned different pieces. We've made production line changes on pieces in the transmission or in uprights or in control arms. So for us, it is exactly the reason we're here, to sell more Mazdas and to sell ones that are long-lasting on the street for the consumers.
And as we've been talking here with John Doolan, the Mazda Speed Motorsports manager, the Dyson team, they're done for the evening. It's certainly thinning out here, John. Mm. What's happening in the timesheets?
Well, just before you started talking with John there, the Chris Dyson car went to fifth position. John Field, by the way, has gone up to sixth place. So it's Alan McNish at the back of the top of the timing screens. Remember, we had Peugeot's doing rather well a little early on. 1:45.993 for McNish. 46.371 for Sarrazin in the 08 Peugeot. Pedro Lamy in the 07 car with a 47.999. Scott Dixon, pole sitter for the weekend's race in the 66 XM Radio Acura, is in fourth position with a 57.0. 59.0 for Chris Dyson, the only P2 car under 2 minutes. And he's ahead of John Field in a P1 car. And Lucas Lehr in the number one Audi is down in seventh place with a 2:01. 0.296. In GT1, Johnny O'Connell has the three car of the best of the Corvettes. The Brabham Sharp and Frank Kitney, number 9 Tequila Patron car, just running through a very short program tonight. As you heard Duncan Dayton saying to us earlier, he's in ninth position with a 2:03. That was done in much wetter conditions than we find ourselves in now. And one or two of the cars are being dragged back towards the awnings. In 10th is the first of the GT2 cars. That is still the 95 car. This is the AE Pecom racing team. Ferrari ahead of the Ferrari of Risi Competizione. First of the Porsches is predictably the 45 Flying Lizard of Patrick Long, ahead of the BMW number 90 of Joey Hand. And Paul Drayson's team, with Johnny Cocker, Paul Drayson, and Rob Bell in the 007 GT2 Aston Martin in fifth position, rounding up the top six. Lou Gelotti's GT2 Corvette, Eric Curran last at the wheel of that car. Fantastic stuff from those guys. Brilliant stuff indeed. Now, just a couple of things to remind you of. Don't forget, if you are going to be watching the Speed or Motors TV coverage at the weekend, may I recommend the Radio Le Mans 1010s Speed Hunters and SpeedTV.com ALMS Spotters Guide. There's a link to it on the ALMS pages of RadioLeMond.com, or go directly to spotterguides.com, spotterguides.com, or andyblackmoredesign.com. Andy's done his usual sterling work. For those of you at the track, by the way, those spotters guides will be available for a donation to the ALMS charity of $1, and I'm told that they will be available on race day. And the other thing that I want to talk about right now, before we go back to Jeremy for a moment, is that the official ALMS yearbook is out as well. And that is available at the all of the ALMS official merchandising stands and one or two of the other merchandising outlets as well. It's $50. It's a fantastic record of what must be one of, if not the single best season of any motorsport ever. That was the 10th anniversary LMS season last year, where race after race we thought it couldn't get any better, and it just kept doing it. So keep your eyes open for that. That's the LMS yearbook from last year around the circuit, and I'll be giving details over the weekend of how those of you on the World Wide Web can get hold of a copy as well. Alan McNish with a 1:45.993, fastest man of the night, only got in the car this evening and has now got out. Jeremy Shaw, is that it done for this evening, or is his teammates going to have a go?
No, he's done. He's just having a drink of water here and a big smile across his face. He's having fun this evening, isn't he, Alan McNish?
Yeah, the circuit actually I think is better than it has been for most of the week now. I don't know if the rain washed all the sort of dirt off it or just cooled down, but certainly the car was handling very well. It's obviously quite new for us here with the new Audi R15, and we're still trying to sort of find our way a little bit, which we clocked onto yesterday morning.
Just briefly, we'll get back to that, but you're talking about the rubber there on the track. I mean, there's all sorts of different series running here this weekend and all sorts of different rubber, and that was quite heavy rain there for a while, so it probably has washed the track fairly clean, and as you say, conditions now are about as good as they're going to get, probably, aren't they? Nice and cool, too.
I hope not. I hope they're better come Saturday. But we arrived here last Saturday, and the circuit was in very, very good condition. But it seemed to get slower and slipperier and greasier the more cars that ran, which is, it's part of the thing here. The circuit changes so much, and that's part of the, hopefully, the experience we can draw on come Saturday, is that we've done this race many times. We've won it a few, and we've got a new car to try and do it again.
Yeah, and a lot of fun, this car, isn't it? It's quite different to the R10 TDI you've been driving for the last several years.
Jeremy, it's very similar, but it is very different. It's similar insofar as it's still a diesel. It's still twin turbo.
That's about it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but
Michelin tyres, and that's about it.
Yeah, but if you sit in it, you know it's got the DNA of the R8 and the R10 as well. But the reality is it's very much a generation forward from what the R10 was, and I think aerodynamically you can see it's a move. The weight distribution's better, so the car's much more agile. You can throw it around. It's like a go-kart, actually, to drive. And for anybody down there at Turn 7 at the hairpin, you know, we're throwing it in and having big smiles on our faces as we're going through as well. And so it's a nice car and feeling to actually get to right now.
It just sort of, it turns into the corners better, just more front grip as well, just a better overall balance.
Well, it's a bit of everything. It's a bit of throttle response, it's a bit of front grip, it's a bit of balance, it's a bit of rear end. You know, it's a whole package. You can't just say one point on it. But we had to, because last year we realised that the R10 was, well, it was at the end of its design life. Peugeot was there with a new car that was very quick. We knew Acura was coming with a new vehicle. And everybody was ramping up because, you know, we've been king of the hill for a long time and they wanted to knock us off the top of that. And we obviously had to come back and try to keep our crown.
And this R15 TDI, I mean, that's what I call a purpose-filled looking race car.
Well, the last one was pretty purpose-built. It won every championship in Le Mans.
I mean, it's a real, it looks, you know, it's groundbreaking stuff on this car.
Yes, it is. We've pushed the boundaries even further than we had with the previous diesel. And that's in terms of the packaging, in terms of the way the engine works, in terms of every aspect of it. The engineers back in Germany, I think, should be congratulated on the job they've done, because not only is it, you know, got good performance, actually, it looks pretty good as well.
It does indeed. You won a couple of times here. What price the third, Alan McNish?
Well, certainly we want it. There's no question about it. After last year, where we had a bit of a hiccup and a stumble, and finished third overall, but admittedly won the LMP1 category. We want to make amends for that. But we do know the Peugeot is very fast in the long runs. They want to make amends for what they can only attribute to be a slightly smaller trophy cabinet in 2008 than we had in the end. And Acura want to show us that they've got a clean pair of heels come Saturday. So whichever way, the fans are going to win out of this, because it's going to be one hell of a race.
Yeah, it is going to be fun. Alan McNish, thank you.
Thank you.
Just another little word from the pit lane. I've got a couple of stories for you that we can talk over, if you wish, at some point, concerning VC and Risi. No puns or awkward double entendres intended. Risi, let's do that one first. Jamie Mello, we know from Fiona Miller, is through immigration and on his way down here. He won't have done his night laps. Now, yes. In conversation with Dick Martin, the implication of that is not necessarily that the team will be made to start from the back or anything like that, but it does mean that unless he gets some dispensation from the organizers, he can't drive at night.
Good
so
point.
Right, so when the starter, for the starter it is on the gantry who decides when it is officially, as far as he's concerned, night, then if Jamie is in the car, he will have to come into the pits and get out. And if he's not in the car, he won't then be allowed in it anymore. So that will cause Mr. Sims some head scratching around his driver strategy, unless they can get a dispensation. Mm. So that's one to mull over.
Right, so that's the Risi
competizione. That's the Risi side of things. The Visi side of things is that, no, we haven't seen the 5 car, but I'm reliably informed that it will be out tomorrow with all drivers listed, and they will, because they are known to the series, both drivers and team, that shouldn't pose any huge problem, and of course they will be allowed to start the race.
Am I right in saying that car hasn't run at all this week?
You are right in saying that car has not run at all this week.
Oh dear. Right. I'm just wondering how much Mark Bessing and Richard Westbrook, Bessing's raced in the series before. I'm not sure if he's raced here. I'd have to look that up. Richard has. Lance David Arnold, German driver.
A German driver with an American name.
I don't think he's raced here, Jeremy.
He's got lots of Carrera Cup experience, lots of bit of Super Cup, I think. But I don't believe he's done anything much over here.
Okay, so here's the question then, posing back to you, Graham.
Yes.
If Jamie Merlo won't be allowed to drive in the dark because he hasn't done his nighttime qualifying, does that mean that nobody in the VC racing car will be allowed to drive in the dark either?
Well, there are going to be dispensations. Hang on, wait a minute. We can go to the horse's, let's say mouth for now. Dick Martin is going to fill us in on that one.
Well, we were discussing earlier, Graham, about Jamie Mello and whether he could drive at night. The team has presented to the stewards a force majeure letter, and he's been granted permission to drive at night. We know Jamie Mello. He's a quality driver. He's a quality person. So he will be driving at night here at Sebring.
How about the boys in the VC5 car? Because they haven't been out. None of them have done a night lap, and one of them at least is not known.
They have a problem. I don't know whether they presented it to the stewards because I've not talked to them about it, but the rules are clear that you have to have 3 laps of night practice to be able to drive at night. Well, if you've not been driving tonight, then you've got a problem come race day.
And, okay, the question hangs then.
Yes.
It does, and that's the reason why we have stewards and why I have a race director. If it was black and white, we wouldn't be in this world and have to have somebody to make decisions like this. Quality people deserve to have at least a chance to present their case, why they couldn't, et cetera. So we have some quality stewards up there led by Marty Kaufman, and they'll make a judicious decision, the best for all concerned.
Thanks, Dick. Words of wisdom, yes, as ever, from Dick Martin, who rules the pit lane with a rod of iron.
and a happy smile. Frank Montani has gone to the top of the timing and scoring monitors with a 45.920. Alan McNish will not finish the session as the top dog this evening. 145.920 for Montani. McNish, 45.993. Pedro Lamy, 47.999. So some little gap between the first two and the rest, but remember, conditions have been getting steadily better, Jim, as the night has gone on. Scott Dixon, the pole sitter, in fourth position. Chris Dyson, still the only P2 car below 2 minutes. Just seeing if there's been any other big changes. GT2, Matthias Russo's got into the Advanced Engineering Ferrari, but that still leads from the 62 car, 45, 90, 007, and 28. That's as it was.
I'm not sure, John, but I might have to check back on some of the results from the earlier practice sessions. Where we're on practice number 4. Is this not the fourth time in 4 sessions that as we've come into the final 2 minutes of a session, there's suddenly a Peugeot at the top of the charts, and today by 66/100ths of a second?
Yeah, we had, obviously, the Acura was fastest in the qualifying session. In the third practice,
the
we had the two Audis were quickest in the practice 3. and the Peugeots were actually languishing. What I have noticed, though, is that Peugeot that you're pointing out and its teammate car have done respectively 40 and 36 laps tonight, and the only team that's done anywhere near that is that 95 Advanced Engineering Ferrari, who's also done 40 laps. And indeed, the fast lap from Montani coming on the 38th of 40 laps. Just about a minute left of the session. We'll take the opportunity to pick up a couple of interviews before the end of our broadcast. Jeremy Shaw is down, I think, in Peugeot country, Jeremy. Oh, and Jeremy's disappeared. And there is nothing heard from...
Actually, coming into the weekend, I was of the understanding this was almost a test session for the new Audi. It looks as though the test session, or it's being used as a test session by the Peugeot.
Not a bad idea, really.
That's why we're here.
And also, you know, we heard, didn't we, from Nick Manassian with Graham Tyler that they intend to do a lot of testing, but not very much racing between now and Le Mans. The Le Mans test day itself on the circuit of Le Sartre has disappeared. Which means that the opportunity to test at Le Mans itself has disappeared before race week. That effectively has turned the Spa 1000K into almost a de facto test. And Peugeot, we heard, will take three cars to that, and that will be, but they won't be at Barcelona, interestingly, as we come down to the last 3 seconds, and the checkered flag will be being grasped and unfurled, and now waved gently over the start-finish line. See if we can nip back down to
Sebastian Bourdais,
Jeremy Shaw there. Jeremy, you read my mind. with Sebastian Bourdais. He went to Jeremy just a moment ago, but I think we were having a little problem or two. Sebastian Bourdais, is he happy, Jeremy?
He is. I'm sorry to interrupt. He's talking to Simona De Silvestro here, who's driving, of course, in the Coupetard's Atlantic Championship later on this weekend. And Simona, you're looking forward to racing, I presume?
Yeah, I don't know. We had an okay day today, but... You know, I wish I was in Sebastian's car right now.
I bet you do. And Sebastian, he's got a massive amount of success, of course, in North America, including a class victory here in the panels a couple of years ago here at Sebring. Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah, it's a great place. I've always loved to come here, and quite looking forward to the race. We put a lot of efforts into the preparation of this one. Obviously, it's the first time we run the AC unit in the car, so we are still, you know, very tentative on what we do, but... If reliability isn't an issue, then it should be a great race.
So this is a very different car to the Peugeots you drove a couple of years ago.
Yeah, this time I won't have to look into the mirrors, that's for sure.
That is for sure. But how is this AC conditioning system working in the car?
No, it's working, but obviously, like I said, you know, it's the first time we've got the system running in race conditions and you know, in that kind of temperatures, obviously. For Sebring, it's quite a typically... cold right now, but for sure during the race it will get a bit warmer than this, and we really haven't got a clue what the system is going to do, because back in Europe it isn't exactly sunshine and 30 degrees, so we'll see what happens.
Now, there's been a bit of a race sort of developing this evening. You were quickest for a while, and Alain McNish, and now Frank Montagne has gone back out again in your car and is back to the fastest time, a pretty impressive fastest time as well.
Yeah, the car is working great tonight. We're trying to evaluate what the tires are doing, and it's looking quite good. And I think all three drivers really like the car the way it is. And like I said, we didn't work for qualifying, but we're definitely quite happy with what we've got right now.
Bouncing back from a little bit of a mishap earlier in the week.
Yeah, for sure. If I had not crashed the car, it would have been a complete week. But I guess when it starts with some hiccups, sometimes it finishes well.
So talk briefly about Formula One. You've got the first race in Melbourne coming up. First of all, I think everybody in North America was delighted with the way you performed towards the end of last year in the Toro Rosso car. You had some really strong showings there, and I know it's a brand new car. You got it very, very late before the first race of this new season, but looking forward to the new Formula One season?
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to it. New philosophy, new rules, new car. But we unfortunately got the car really late, and I only managed to do one lap. One day, in Barcelona, and it's very green. We don't really have a clue of what we should put as a starting setup, but all in all, I think we'll be all right. As long as Adrian Newey's his team is doing a good job and they're working really hard, we will have a quick car.
Thank you, Sebastian.
You're welcome.
Good stuff from Sebastian, and also from Jeremy Shaw and Graham Tyler. Coming to the end of our programming here with a reminder to everyone 454 is our scanner frequency, and on race day we'll be on WWTK AM 730. For our international listeners, we'll have a replay of qualifying coming up in a few moments. Just a few observations from the booth here. Jim Martin and myself doing a quick bit of mental arithmetic. Well, actually, we've had our shoes and socks off as well. The two Audi, the two Peugeots, excuse me, have done between them 80 laps this evening.
And you have to add up four or five other cars to get anything close to that.
That is more than the rest of the P1 field put together. The two Audis have only done 29 laps between them. The two Acuras have only done 19 laps between them, with the Highcroft having only done 6 laps. And there's not very many cars only in single figures. The Fields did 10. Autocon did... where are Autocon, the 12 car? Down 9 there, single figures. The Panos only did 8. And the Krohn car only, the 61, only did 8 as well. And the 40, the GT, only did 9. However, those guys are significantly at the opposite end of the field from what's going on. We were talking about doing lots of testing, Jim Martin, for... Peugeot, they've turned that into a test session instead of a test session tonight. They pretty much ran the full session.
Absolutely. They've they got the cars out right off the top. They were some of the first cars out on the race circuit in spite of the damp conditions when we first started. Didn't slow them down very much.
Nope.
They went out and they ran the entire session. For a team that, back in France, the testing back in the home circuit at Le Mans has been taken away from them, or a piece of it anyway. They're making it up for it from the look of it. Everywhere else they're going to go.
And they're staying on, as are Audi, for an extended test later on this week. The cars are coming back past us. All it remains for me to do is to thank the guys in the pit lane, Graham Tyler and Jeremy Shaw. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, sir.
And
like great fun, actually. A very interesting session, that I thought. Much more, there's quite a few cars didn't do very many laps, but as you said, several others did. And I think it's going to be an absolutely fascinating race on Saturday.
Yeah, and we have got, thanks, gents, we have got, of course, another session tomorrow. Just the one on-track session for the LMS tomorrow. Lots of other activity around the circuit, of course. Plenty of reason for you to be around and about if you're nearby. We will be covering the session here on the American Le Mans Series Radio Network presented by Porsche. But for the moment, at least, with a replay of qualifying to come for our international listeners, on behalf of Jim Martin, Graham Tyler, Jeremy Shaw, I'm John Hindhoff. Thanks very much for being with us. Have a good evening and bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.